Heyo, and welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part one of Return of the Mummy by R.L. Stein on Dune Reads Goosebumps. I know that I said last time that it was the last book in the original series, but I was informed by many of you via Facebook, Twitter, Gmail, Instagram, and whatnot that I was incorrect. I missed Return of the Mummy, but that works out perfectly because it bookends the series well, not that I'm finishing it, just the original series, because I met R.L. Stein. I got a picture with R.L. Stein. I touched the man. Oh, God. I can't specifically say how I got to be in that situation. I have a buddy that we'll call Kenneth Poltergoost. And he got me in on the list for a Comic-Con party for Scholastic Books. And R.L. Stein was there. I first went to go talk to him. And it was like 4 minutes before the actual party officially started. And I asked to get a picture with him because that was my only priority of leaving the house that evening. And he was like, yeah, it hasn't started yet. I can't do that. It was 4 minutes away. You know, that's like one Black Eyed Peas song or four Ramones songs. Oh, that was a little shitty, but eventually we got over to him and his friends and got a picture. It was amazing. It was also great that there was an open bar that was paid for by Scholastic, who took a little legal action against me, if you remember. They shut down, DuneReadsGoosebumps.com? That's no more. So it was nice to cop a solid buzz on their dime. Yeah, what else do I need to get about that? They had two cocktails that were, one I think was Monster Blood and one was Vampire's Breath. I wish I would have recorded this right after, but this is the first time I've had time to myself in, Jesus, over a month. Yeah, they gave out a bag that says Goosebumps, like a tote that had books and stuff that haven't come out yet. So I got some Goosebumps that hasn't dropped. But I'm not going to try to screw anyone over by recording it or anything like that. That would be wrong. Yeah, there's hors d'oeuvres. There was a photo booth. I don't know. You know, I just went there. There's some pictures at facebook.com/DuneReadsGoosebumps if you want to check them out. I already recorded the first half of the first half, so the first quarter maybe, of Return of the Mummy. And I just didn't like it. I was still too depressed. Well, maybe I still am, but I, you know, the show must go on. But I just felt like I wasn't funny or interesting. So I'm just going to go over it again. But luckily, I tried to drink through it the first time, so I have no idea what happened. So it all works out. Works out? It all works elk. Did you deer me? That's some fawn humor. Yeah, what's going on in my life? I'm still miserable. My ex-fiance is still not with me. I'm still living with my parents. I've had to start like applying to jobs and stuff, which I've never actually had to do at 31. So it's weird. But my resume is good if you want to hire me. What else? I've been, you know, getting a lot of exercise and eating well and stuff. I finally weigh less at 31 than I did at 19, which I'm very proud of. Due to lots of effort, and I don't know. I'm just bummed out and trying to get through the day each day, honestly. Anyway, let's just get into this. Return of the Mummy, Part 1, by R.L. Stein on Dune Reads Goosebumps.
Chapter number 1.
Gabe will be landing soon, the stewardess told me, leaning over the seat. Ooh, showing that cleave.
Will somebody be meeting you at the airport?
Yes. Probably an ancient Egyptian pharaoh, I told her. Or maybe a disgusting, decaying mummy. Oh no, that's why you shouldn't smoke. So when you're a mummy, you don't decay. Maybe this one's going to be terrible too, but, you know, strap in, assholes. She narrowed her eyes at me. No, really, she insisted. Who will be meeting you in Cairo? My Uncle Ben, I replied, referencing the rice man. But he likes to play practical jokes. Sometimes he dresses in weird costumes and tries to scare me. Oh, you're not a proctologist. Get your finger out of there. You told me that your uncle was a famous scientist, the stewardess said. He is, I replied. Rice science. But he's also weird. She laughed. I liked her a lot. She had pretty blonde hair. And I liked the way she always tilted her head to one side when she talked, much like a dog does when it listens. Her name was Nancy, and she had been very nice to me during the long flight to Egypt. She knew it was my first time flying all by myself. She kept checking in on me and asking how I was doing, but she treated me like a grown-up. She gave me little bottles of scotch and made me complain about my ex. She didn't bring me one of those dumb connect-the-dots books or a plastic wings pin that they always give to kids on planes and won't give to Dune because he's too drunk to be on a plane and needs to be escorted off. And she kept slipping me extra bags of peanuts. Ah, nature's roofie. Even though she wasn't supposed to. Is supposed going to be my new axing? We'll find out. Why are you visiting your uncle? Nancy axed. Just for fun? I nodded. I did it last summer, too, I told her. It was really awesome. But this year, Uncle Ben, you know, Rice Kingpin, has been digging in an unexplored pyramid. He's discovered an ancient, sacred tomb. How do you know it's sacred? And he invited me to be with him when he opens it up. She laughed and tilted her head a little bit more, like a parakeet. You have a good imagination, Gabe, she said. Then she turned away to answer a man's question. Great, he was probably mansking. That's the opposite of mansplaining. I do have a good imagination, but I wasn't making that shit up. My Uncle Ben Hassad is a famous archaeologist. He has been digging around the pyramids for lots of years. How specific. I've seen newspaper articles about him. And once, he was in National Geographic. So what? I was in Hustler. It was a Christmas issue. 2008, maybe? I don't know. You can look it up, but you can see my face in Hustler. Fully clothed. Last summer, my entire family visited Cairo. My cousin Sari and I, she's Uncle Ben's daughter, had some amazing adventures down in the chambers of the Great Pyramid. Sorry, we'll be there this summer, too, I remembered, staring out the plane window at the solid blue sky. Da-ba-dee-da. I wondered if maybe she would give me a break this time. I like Sorry, but she's so competitive. She always has to be the first, the strongest, the smartest, the best. She always finishes first when we play doctor. She's the only 13-year-old girl I know who can turn eating breakfast into a contest. Flight attendants, prepare for landing, the pilot announced over the loudspeaker. I sat up to get a better view out the window. As the plane lowered, I could see the city of Cairo beneath us. A slender blue ribbon curled along the city. That, I knew, was the Nile River. The city stretched out from the river. Peering straight down, I could see tall glass skyscrapers and low domed temples. And judging off pictures I've seen of the pyramids on Reddit, probably like Pizza Huts. Seems like that's the best view of the pyramids. Where the city ended, the desert began. Yellow sand stretched to the horizon like God could no longer hold his bladder. My stomach began to feel a little fluttery. Diarrhea. When you're flying into Egypt and your bowels start to be ripped, whatever. The pyramids were somewhere out there in that desert, and in a day or two, I would be climbing down into one of them, following my uncle into a tomb that hadn't been opened for thousands of years, the way the Egyptians intended, but we're just gonna fuck that up for them. What would we find? I pulled the little mummy hand from my shirt pocket and gazed down at it. It was so tiny, no bigger than a child's hand. I had bought it from a kid at a garage sale for $2. He said it was called a summoner. He said it could summon ancient evil spirits like Frankenberry and Booberry and Count Chocula. It looked like a mummy hand. The fingers were wrapped in stained gauze bandages with a little black tar heroin showing through. I thought it was fake, made of rubber or plastic. I mean, I never thought it was a real mummy hand, but last summer, the hand had saved all of our lives. The kid who sold it to me was right. It really did bring a bunch of mummies to life. It was amazing. Have you seen the video for Thriller? It was like that, but, you know, maybe better, but without Vincent Price. Return of the Flies with Vincent Price. Of course, my parents and my friends back home didn't believe my incredible story, and they didn't believe that the summoner really worked. They said it was just a joke mummy hand made in some souvenir factory, probably made in Taiwan. I have one of those hands right near me. It's not wrapped in toilet paper like that one, but it has like the hang loose sign, and I got it in Hawaii. And my lucky number is 13, like Mike Ness. But I really do believe that the little mummy hand will protect me. The strange thing about the mummy hand is that it was always warm. It doesn't feel like plastic. It feels warm, like pee-pee, like a real human hand covered in pee-pee. Back home in Michigan, I had a major panic attack when Mom and Dad were packing my suitcase for the flight. I couldn't find the mummy hand, and, of course, there was no way I would go to Egypt without it, because I'm spoiled. I was so relieved when I finally found it. It was tucked into the back pocket of a crumpled-up pair of jeans. Now, as the plane nosed down for a landing, I reached for the hand in my pocket of my shirt and shit. I pulled it out and gasped. The hand was cold.
Cold as ice! Willing to sacrifice for Egypt.
Chapter 2, that's the poo-poo chapter, baby. Why had the mummy hand suddenly turned cold? Was it some kind of message? A warning? Some sort of primitive tweet? Was I heading into danger? Possibly a zone of danger? I didn't have time to think about that shit. The plane rolled into the gate, and the passengers were scrambling to pull down their carry-on bags and push their way out of the plane. They shouldn't push so much. You should just go in an even zipper pattern, and everyone gets out quickly. I tucked the mummy hand into my jeans pocket, hoisted up my backpack, and headed to the front. I said goodbye to Nancy and thanked her for all the peanuts, like some sort of dolphin thanking Earth for the fish. Then I followed the others down the long, covered ramp and into the airport. So many people. Black people, white people, Egyptian people, mostly Egyptian people, lots of Egyptian people, Asian people, Mexicans, Eskimos, Indians, Chinese people and Japanese people. What have I missed out on? Mongols. Afrikaans. I don't know. Fucking Australia. They're white people though, right? They look like me, except for the Aboriginal people. Can I say Abos? I know they say that. Is that racist? Anyway, and they all seemed to be in a hurry. They were practically stepping over each other. Men in dark business suits. Women in loose, flowing robes. Their faces covered by veils. Teenage girls in jeans and t-shirts. A group of dark, serious-looking men in silky white suits that looked like pajamas. And a family with three little kids, all crying. I had a sudden sinking feeling. How would I ever find Uncle Ben in this crowd? It's like finding one grain in a whole box of Uncle Ben's branded rice. My backpack began to feel very heavy, like Frodo's ring. My eyes frantically searched back and forth. Strange voices surrounded me like a bunch of Muppets, all talking so loudly. No one was speaking English. That's rude of the Egyptians. Ow! I cried out as I felt a sharp pain in my side. Ooh, that's cirrhosis, baby. I turned and realized that a woman had bumped me with her luggage cart. Stay calm, Gabe, I instructed myself. Just stay calm. Uncle Ben is here, looking for you. He'll find you. You just have to stay calm.
But what if my uncle forgot?
I asked myself.
What if he got all mixed up about what day I was arriving? Or what if he got busy down in the pyramid and lost track of time? Because, you know, watches don't work down there because, you know, the sand.
I can be a real worrier if I put my mind to it.
Yeah, it's called anxiety. You need Xanax, bruh.
And right now, I was worrying enough for three people. That's how many. Exactly three. If Uncle Ben isn't here, I'll go to a phone and I'll call him, I decided for sure. I could just hear myself saying,
Operator, can I speak to my uncle at the pyramids, please?
That was like starting out to be a Grateful Dead reference, and it didn't go that way at all, so I apologize for that weird singing. I don't think that would work too well. I didn't have a phone number for Uncle Ben. I wasn't sure he even had a phone out where he was staying. All I knew was that he had been living in a tent somewhere near the pyramid where he was digging.
Ah, there's a lot of people that live near the pyramid in Vegas in a tent, digging their veins.
Gazing frantically around the crowded arrival area, I was just about to give in to total panic, because I haven't read The Hitchhiker's Guide, when a large man came walking up to me. I couldn't see his face. He wore a long white hooded robe, like a Klansman. It's called a burnoose.
Ooh, burning a noose kills someone twice.
And his face was buried inside the hood.
Taxi?
He axed in a high, shrill voice.
Taxi? American taxi?
I burst out laughing. Uncle Ben, I cried happily.
Taxi, American taxi, taxi ride?
He insisted.
Uncle Ben, I'm so glad to see you, I exclaimed.
I threw my arms around his waist.
Oh, because that's how kids hug. I thought, because normally that's how women hug, but I realized that the kid's probably short. You know, unlike me, who's 7'5" when I was a kid and shrunk down to 6 foot since then,
and gave him a big hug. Then, laughing at his stupid disguise, I reached up and pulled back his hood as if I were in an episode of Scooby-Doo. The man under the hood had a bald, shaved head and heavy black mustache. He glared at me furiously. I had never seen him before in my life.
It's my life, and I've never seen a bald man with a mustache as black. But I'm gonna live forever. Chapter number 3. Strap in, fuckers. This is a long one. I had to get a new cocktail and water and pee.
Chapter 3. Gabe, Gabe, over here. I heard a voice calling my name. And glancing past the angry man, I saw Uncle Ben and Sari. They were waving to me from in front of the reservations counter. The man's face turned bright red, and he shouted something at me in Arabic. I was glad I couldn't understand him. I kept muttering as he pulled up the hood of his burnoose.
Is that how you pronounce that?
Vermouth?
Oh, never mind.
Sorry about that,
I cried. Then I dodged past him and hurried to greet Uncle Ben and my cousin. Uncle Ben shook my hand and said, Welcome to Cairo, Gabe. He was wearing a loose-fitting white short-sleeved sports shirt and baggy chinos. Sari wore faded denim cutoffs and a bright green tank top tie. She was already laughing at me. A bad start.
Was that a friend of yours? She teased.
I made a mistake, I confessed.
Yeah, leave him alone. People make mistakes.
Honestly, my entire 20s was a mistake. I glanced back. The man was still scowling at me.
Did you really think that was Daddy?
Sari demanded.
That didn't help at all. That just made it worse.
I mumbled a reply. Sari and I were the same age, but I saw that she was still an inch taller than me. She had let her black hair grow. It fell down her back in a single braid, like a Dothraki. Her big, dark eyes sparkled excitedly as if she were on ecstasy all the time. She loved making fun of me, as if she were Dune. I told them about my flight as we walked to the baggage area to get my suitcase. I told them how Nancy, the stewardess, kept slipping me bags of peanuts.
I flew here last week, Sari told me. The stewardess let me sit in first class.
Did you know you can have an ice cream sundae in first class?
Honestly, thanks to Gio, my experience with First Class International was one of the best of my life.
First off, yes, there is ice cream. Also, you get your own full bed that reclines, and you wake up, and there's water next to you, and you can drink until you pass out and watch whatever you want. So you drink, 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 and then you fall asleep, and you wake up, and there's water, then you drink, drink, drink. It's, oh, goddamn, it's fantastic. Maybe that's not how everyone does it, but goddamn, that's how I did it. Do-do-do-do-do-do. No, I didn't know that. I could see that Sari hadn't changed a bit. She's not even apologetic, which you'd expect someone named Sari to be. Good one, Dune. She goes to a boarding school in Chicago since Uncle Ben has been spending all of his time in Egypt. Of course, she's getting straight A's, and she's a champion skier and tennis player. Does it snow that much in Chicago? Huh. I guess I don't know anything about my, country. I went to Chicago once, again with Gio. It was tight. Anyway, sometimes I feel a little sorry for her. Bang! Her mom died when Sari was 5. A little sorry? Jesus, you should feel much more sorry. And Sari only gets to see her dad on holidays and during summer. Jesus, you should feel much more sorry. But as we waited for my suitcase to come out of the conveyor belt, as if being birthed by some sort of god machine, I wasn't feeling sorry for her at all. She was busy bragging about how the pyramid was twice as big as the one I'd seen last summer, and how she'd already been down in it several times, and how she'd take me on a tour if I wasn't too afraid. Finally, my bulging blue balls, suitcase appeared. I lugged it off the conveyor and dropped it at my feet. It weighed a ton, like Chuck D's Uzi. I tried to lift it, but I could barely budge it. Sari pushed me out of the way. Let me get that, she insisted. She grabbed the handle, raised the suitcase off the floor, and started off with it. Hey, I called after her. What a show off. Uncle Ben grinned at me as if he just had the biggest bowl of rice out of God's own wok. Man, I'm making a bunch of weird God comments, aren't I? I think Sari has been working out, he said. He put a hand on my shoulder and led me towards the glass doors. Let's get to the Jeep. Drinking break. I'm drinking Kirkland brand rum and Diet Pepsi with no aspartame, because that gives me migraines. I've been drinking goddamn vodka, soda water, and lime juice all weekend. We loaded the suitcase into the back of the Jeep. Then we headed toward the city, which was built on that weird Arabic music. It's been sweltering hot during the day, Uncle Ben told me, mopping his broad forehead with a handkerchief. And then cool at night. Traffic crawled on the narrow street. Horns honked constantly, just doing their fucking horn thing. Drivers kept their horns going whether they were moved or stopped. The noise was deafening. We're not stopping in Cairo, Uncle Ben explained. We're going straight to the pyramid at Al Jizza. We're all living in tents out there so we can be close to our work. I hope you brought bug spray, Sari complained. The mosquitoes are as big as frogs. Ugh. Don't exaggerate, Uncle Ben scolded, like as if you overcooked his rice, even though it's minute rice. You probably put it in for 90 seconds. That's too much. It's too goddamn much. Gabe isn't afraid of a few mosquitoes, are you? No way, I replied quietly. What has anyone ever got from mosquitoes in the African continent, you know? Barely anyone's ever died from malaria. Oh, most people died from malaria? Oh, fuck. Never mind. How about scorpions? Sari demanded. The traffic grew lighter as we left the city behind and headed into the desert. The yellow sand gleamed under the hot afternoon sun. Waves of heat rose up in front of us as the Jeep bumped over the narrow two-lane road. Before long, a pyramid came into view. Behind the waves of heat of the desert floor, it looked like a wavering mirage. It didn't seem real. As I stared out at it, my throat tightened with excitement. Also potentially malaria. I had seen the pyramids last summer, but it was still a thrilling sight. Look at this fucking asshole trying to be like, nah, dude, I'm still down to earth. I'm not a spoiled kid. Like, every time I see the pyramids, yes, I see them once a year, but every time I see them, it's still thrilling, you know? Oh, you've never been out of the country? Oh my God. You're so poor. That's what I imagined him saying. I can't believe the pyramids are over 4,000 years old. I exclaimed. Yeah, that's even older than me, Uncle Ben joked. His expression turned serious. It fills me with pride every time I see them, Gabe, he admitted, to think that our ancient ancestors, possibly aliens, were smart enough and skilled enough to build these marvels. Also, there's no historical evidence that Jews ever built them. The Bible is wrong. About everything. Uncle Ben was right. I guess the pyramids have a special meaning for me since my family is Egyptian. Both sets of my grandparents came from Egypt. They were just vacationing. They're obviously Dutch. They moved to the United States around 1930. My mom and dad were born in Michigan. I think of myself as a typical American kid. I'm just hanging out, vaping, skateboarding, listening to Kid Cudi. But there's something still exciting about visiting the country where your ancestors are from. I've never visited countries where my ancestors are from. I don't know that excitement. As we drove nearer, the pyramid appeared to rise up in front of us due to how distance and scale works. Its shadow formed a long blue triangle over the yellow sand. Cars and tour buses jammed a small parking lot. I could see a row of saddled camels tethered on one side of the lot. A crowd of tourists stretched across the sand, gazing up at the pyramid, snapping photographs, leaving their trash around, shitting everywhere, chatting noisily and pointing. Uncle Ben turned the Jeep onto a narrow side road, and we headed away from the crowd toward the back of the pyramid. How do you know if it's the back? It's got four sides that are all equal. As we drove into the shade, the air suddenly felt cooler, because that's how shade works, asshole. I'd kill for an ice cream cone. Sorry, wailed. I've never been so hot in my life. Let's not talk about heat, Uncle Ben replied, turning down the Buster Poindexter record, sweat dripping down his forehead into his bushy eyebrows. Let's talk about how happy you are to see your father after so many months. Sorry, groaned. I'd be happier to see you if you were carrying an ice cream cone. Is that what you want, bitch? You want me to serve fucking ice cream for a living like some sort of Cold Stone asshole? I fucking explore pyramids that no one has been in for thousands of years. God damn, I wish you were appreciative. Uncle Ben laughed. A khaki-uniformed guard stepped in front of the Jeep. Uncle Ben held up a blue ID card. The guard waved us past. As we followed the road behind the pyramid, a row of low white canvas tents came into view. Welcome to the Pyramid Hilton, Uncle Ben joked. That's our luxury suite over there. He pointed to the nearest tent. It's pretty comfortable, he said, parking the Jeep beside the tent. But the room service is loudy. Loudy? Lousy. Damn it. I mispronounced that, and then I couldn't get into my joke about him saying things like, fucking Egyptians can't even deliver fucking burgers, right? But that, you know, it's not even a joke. That's just racism. And you have to watch out for scorpions, Sari warned. She'd say anything to try and scare me. We unloaded my suitcase. Then Uncle Ben led us up to the base of the pyramid. A camera crew was packing up its equipment. A young man, covered in dust, climbed out of a low entrance dug into one of the limestone squares. He waved to my uncle, then hurried toward the tents. One of my people, Uncle Ben muttered, throwing a fist in the air. He motioned toward the pyramid. Well, here you are, Gabe. A long way from Michigan, huh? I nodded. It's amazing, I told him, shielding my eyes to gaze up to the top. I forgot how much bigger the pyramids look in person. Fuck, I haven't seen the pyramids. I've just seen Luxor. They're not that big, right? They're just like a basketball hoop. You can dunk on a pyramid, right? Please don't tell me they're bigger than that. I don't want to feel worse about my life. Tomorrow, I'll take you both down to the tomb, Uncle Ben promised, pointing at the fly of his khaki shorts. You've come at just the right time. We've been digging for months and months, and at long last, we are about to break the seal and enter the tomb itself. Wow, I exclaimed. I wanted to be cool in front of Sari, but I couldn't help it. I was really excited. Is excitement uncool? Damn it. I was really excited about meeting R.L. Stein. Guess you'll be really famous after you open that tomb, huh, Dad? Sari asked. She swatted a fly on her arm. Ow! I'll be so famous, the flies will be afraid to... Wait, what? I'll be so famous the flies will be afraid to bite you. Okay, I was reading it right. It's just retarded. Uncle Ben replied, by the way, do you know what they call flies in ancient Egypt? Sari and I shook our heads no. I don't either, Uncle Ben said, grinning. One of his dumb jokes. He had an endless supply of them. At least this one didn't involve the N-word. His expression suddenly changed. Oh, that reminds me. I have a present for you, Gabe. A present? Now, where did I put it? He dug both hands into the pocket of his baggy chinos. As he searched, I saw something move behind him, a shadow over my uncle's shoulder, back at the low opening of the pyramid. I squinted at it. The shadow moved. A figure stepped out slowly. At first, I thought the sun was playing tricks on my eyes, but I squinted harder and realized that I was seeing correctly. The figure stepped out from the pyramid. Its face was covered in worn yellow gauze. So were its arms and its legs. I opened my mouth to cry out, but my voice choked in my throat. And as I struggled to alert my uncle, the mummy stiffly stretched out its arms and came staggering up behind him. Wow, that was a long chapter and I fucking nailed it. Do you hear that? Did I even make a mistake? I gotta get my voice a rest. You're in store for chapter 4, cause right now I'm about to read chapter 4. I saw Sari's eyes grow wide with fright. She let out a low gasp. Uncle Ben! I finally managed to scream. Turn around! It! My uncle narrowed his eyes at me, confused. How many times has this book already said narrowed his eyes, or narrowed my eyes, or narrowed her eyes, or the mummy staggered closer, its hands reaching out menacingly, about to grab the back of Uncle Ben's neck? A mummy! I shrieked. Uncle Ben spun right round, baby, right round. He let out a startled cry. It walks! He shouted, pointing at the mummy with a trembling finger. He backed away as the mummy advanced. It walks! Oh, a strange moan escaped Sari's lips. I turned and started to run, but then the mummy burst out laughing. Ha 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 ha! It lowered its yellow arms. Boo! It cried, laughing again. It's just me, some dude who got a bunch of toilet paper, put it in a bucket, pissed all over it, and wrapped it around his old body to scare some kids. They call me Creepy Dave. Just kidding. I turned and saw that Uncle Ben was laughing too. His dark eyes sparkled gleefully. It walks, he repeated, shaking his head. He put his arm around the mummy's shoulder. I gaped at the two of them, my heart still pounding. This is John, Uncle Ben said, enjoying the joke he'd pulled on us. He's been doing a TV commercial here for some kind of stickier bandage. That's a good way to advertise bandages. Sticky bird bandages, John told us. They're just what your mummy ordered. He and Uncle Ben enjoyed another good laugh at that. Then my uncle pointed to the camera crew, packing their equipment into a small van. They finished for the day, but John agreed to hang around and help me scare you. Sari rolled her eyes. Nice try, she said dryly. You'll have to do better than that, Daddy, to frighten me. And then she added, poor Gabe. Did you see his face? He was so freaked out. I thought he was going to spontaneously combust or something. Uncle Ben and John laughed. Hey, no way, I insisted, feeling my face turn red. How could Sari say that? When the mummy staggered out, I saw her gasp and back away. She was just as scared as I was. Ah, that's what they say about wild animals while you're hiking, and then eventually someone just gets eaten by one, and you're like, I guess mountain lions aren't as afraid of you as you are of them. It's just a specific kind of bears. Anyway, I heard you scream too, I told her. I didn't mean to sound so whiny like a little bitch. I just did that to help them scare you. That was a weird pronunciation. I just did that to help them scare you, Sari insisted. She tossed her long braid over her shoulder. I gotta run, John said, glancing at his wristwatch. As soon as we get back to the hotel, I'm going to hit the pool. I may stay underwater for a week. He gave us a wave of his bandaged hand and went jogging to the van. That's one solid man. He's got a plan. It involves going in the pool, you understand? Words. Why hadn't I noticed that he was wearing a wristwatch? I felt like a total dork. That's it, I cried angrily to my uncle. I'm never falling for one of your dumb jokes ever again. Never. He grinned at me and winked. Wanna bet? What about Gabe's present? Sari asked. What is it? Uncle Ben pulled something out of his pocket and held it up. A pendant on a string, made of clear orange glass. It gleamed in the bright sunlight. He handed it to me. I moved it in my hand, feeling its smoothness as I examined it. What the fuck is this? I asked him. What kind of glass is this? You know, I'm a shard aficionado. It isn't glass, he replied. It's a clear stone called amber. He stepped closer to examine it along with me. Hold it up and look inside the pendant. I followed his instructions. I saw a large brown bug. It looks like some kind of beetle. I said, oh, they're going to make Beetle Park. It is a beetle, Uncle Ben said, squinting one eye to see better. Oh, he must be really drunk. It's an ancient beetle called a scarab. You may know it from collecting them in the Aladdin video game for both Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo. It was trapped in the amber 4,000 years ago. As you can see, it's perfectly preserved. That's really gross, Sari commented, making a face. She slapped Uncle Ben on the back. Rice fell everywhere. Great gift, Dad, a dead bug. Remind me not to let you do our Christmas shopping. You don't have to be so angry. We're all bummed out that your mom died when you were 5. That's very upsetting. You don't have to be mean to everyone. Uncle Ben laughed. Because that's how he laughs. Then he turned back to me. The scarab was very important to the ancient Egyptians, he said, rolling the amber pendant in his fingers, then dropping it back into my palm. They believed that scarabs were a symbol of immortality. Then what happened to their empire? Why does our country suck so much now? I stared at the bug's dark shell, its 6 prickly legs, perfectly preserved. To keep a scarab meant immortality, my uncle continued, but the bite of a scarab meant instant death. That doesn't seem like something you should be involved with. Weird, Sari muttered. It's great looking, I told him. Is it really 4,000 years old? He nodded. Wear it around your neck, Gabe. Maybe it still has some of its ancient powers. I slipped the pendant over my head and adjusted it under my t-shirt. The amber stone felt cold against my skin. Thanks, Uncle Ben, I said. It's a great present. He mopped his sweaty forehead with a wadded-up handkerchief. Let's go back to the tent and get something cold to drink, he said. Ooh, 40 sounds nice. We took a few steps, which is as far as anyone really gets in a 12-step program, and then stopped when we saw Sari's face. Her entire body trembled. Her mouth dropped open as she pointed to my chest. Sari, what is it? Uncle Ben cried. The scarab. She stammered. It escaped. I saw it. She pointed down. It's there. Huh? I spun away from her and bent down to find the scarab. Ow! I cried out when I felt a sharp stab of pain in the back of my leg and realized that the scarab had bitten me. Ah, that means instant death. I'm about to go on eBay right now and buy a scarab that's alive and willing to bite me. It's now the next day. I had to stop recording because I got a little bummed out. Apparently alcohol has a new DLC. Where you randomly get some despair with it, or maybe just life is horrible now, and it's hard to deal with, but, yeah, I got bummed out, and then I was trying to find my place right now, and I was like, oh, all right, right after that suicide joke, got it, makes sense. So anyway, I thought that was going well, so let's hopefully keep that momentum going. Still drinking the same cocktail, though, we'll hope for, less despair.
Chapter number 5.
As I gasped in alarm, Uncle Ben's words about the scarab rushed through my mind. To keep a scarab meant immortality, but the bite of a scarab meant instant death. Instant death? That's quicker than sudden death. No! I let out a loud howl and spun around, and saw Sari hunched down on her knees, grinning, heyo, her hand outstretched, like Kanye's father does. I realized she had pinched my leg. My heart still pounding, I grabbed the pendant and stared into the orange, glassy stone. The scarab was still frozen inside, just as it had been for 4,000 years. I let out a howl of rage. It's hard when they write out, or they, R.L. Stine writes out the sound before I know what it's trying to express. Like, I would have just gone like, ah, you know, but I just see some A's and G's and H's, and I gotta make do. I was mostly furious at myself. Was I going to fall for every dumb joke Uncle Ben and Sari played on me on this trip? If so, it was going to be a very long summer. Shorter than an endless summer. I had always liked my cousin, except for the times when she was being so competitive and superior. We always got along well. But now, I wanted to punch her. I wanted to say really nasty things to her. Moist. But I couldn't think of anything nasty enough. That was really mean, Sari, I said glumly, tucking the pendant under my t-shirt. Yes, it was, wasn't it? She replied, very pleased with herself. Drinking break. That night, I lay on my back on my narrow cot, staring up at the low tent roof, listening to the brush of the wind. That's the bootleg Zelda game. Against the tent door, the soft creak of the tent poles, the flap of the canvas. I don't think I'd ever felt so alert. Turning my head, I could see the pale glow of moonlight through a crack in the tent door. I could see blades of dried grass desert shit on the sand outside. I could see water stains on the tent wall over my bed. If only one could turn into the Virgin Mary, or better yet, Ra, I could sell this whole tent for millions. I'll never get to sleep, I thought unhappily. I pushed and punched the flat pillow for the 20th time, trying to fluff it up. I'll never be a fluffer with these skills. The harsh wool blanket felt scratchy against my chin. I'd slept away from home before, but I'd always slept in a room of some kind, not in the middle of a vast, sandy desert, in a tiny, flapping, criggity-iggity-creaking canvas tent. I wasn't scared. My uncle lay snoring away in his cot a few feet across the tent. I was just alert. Very, very alert. I feel like this alert thing is going to come up pretty soon, you know, because he said it, you know, what, 4 times so far? So alert, 5, I could hear the swish of palm trees outside, and I could hear the low hum of car tires miles away on the narrow road, and I heard the thudding of my heart when something wriggled on my chest. I was so alert, 6, I felt it instantly, just a tickle, a quick, light move. It could be only one thing, the scarab moving inside the amber pendant. No joke this time. No joke, it moved. Was the first time a joke or a misunderstanding? Also, Jurassic Park. God, I think I referenced Jurassic Park last time, too. Would be a totally different movie if the mosquitoes just flew out, you know? Just saying. I fumbled for the pendant in the dark, tossing down the blanket. Which is like the way pussier version of throwing down the gauntlet. I held it up to the moonlight. I could see the fat beetle in there, black in its orange prison. Damn it. I wanted to make a joke about moonlight being the butt version of a fleshlight, but I missed it, but I came back to it. Did you move? I whispered to it. Did you wriggle your legs? I suddenly felt really stupid. Why was I whispering to a 4,000-year-old insect? Why was I imagining that it was alive? Annoyed with myself, me too, I tucked the pendant back under my nightshirt. I had no way of knowing how important that pendant would soon become to me. I had no way of knowing that the pendant held a secret that would either save my life or kill me. Yeah, the scarab. You already explained that plot device.
Chapter number 6. This is a long one too, because it likely wasn't written by R.L. Stine. The tent was already hot when I awoke the next morning. Bright yellow sunlight poured in through the open tent flap. Squinting against the light, I rubbed my eyes and stretched. Uncle Ben had already gone out.
With some ladies, right? That's how his cousin came about, because he had sex.
My back ached. The little cot was so hard. Ooh, it's a rock hard cot. But I was too excited to worry about my back. I was going down in the pyramid this morning to the entrance of the ancient tomb. I pulled on a clean t-shirt and the jeans I'd worn the day before. I adjusted the scarab pendant under the t-shirt. Then I carefully tucked the little mummy hand into the back pocket of my jeans. With the pendant and the mummy hand, I'm well protected, I told myself.
You could also, like, you know, bring a gun. I guess you're a kid, or knife. I don't know. Don't British people just have knife crime? step your game up, England. Fucking shoot someone.
Nothing bad can happen this trip. I pulled a hairbrush through my thick black hair a few times.
Ooh, like the, God damn it, Stray Cats. What's the guy's name?
Brian Setzer song. Bam! Callback to that song when people were into swing in the 90s for some reason. Tugged
my black and yellow
Michigan Wolverines cap on. Then I hurried to the mess tent to get some breakfast. The sun was floating above the palm trees in the distance. The yellow desert sand gleamed brightly. I took a deep breath of fresh air. Yuck.
That's how I feel about fresh air, too. That's why I don't go outside.
There must be some camels nearby, I decided. The air wasn't exactly fresh. I found Sari and Uncle Ben having their breakfast, seated at the end of a long table in the mess tent. Uncle Ben wore his usual baggy chinos and short-sleeved white sport shirt with coffee stains down the front.
Probably poo-poo stains, because feces. I don't know what I'm doing. Let me have another drink. Still not sad yet, but we'll see. Oh, also, I'm going out in a little bit. I'm going to an atmosphere show with my brother tonight. I'm getting some drinks and food beforehand and hanging out with my buddy before that. I've just got a lot to do.
Sari had her long black hair pulled straight back in a ponytail like Steven Seagal. She wore a bright red tank top over white tennis shorts. They greeted me as I entered the tent. I poured myself a glass of orange juice, and since I didn't see any frosted flakes, I filled a bowl with raisin bran.
I haven't had raisin bran in years. That shit's good.
Three of Uncle Ben's workers were eating at the other end of the table. They were talking excitedly about their work. We could go in today, I heard one of them say. It might take days to break the seal on the tomb door, a young woman replied, then explained the introduction of Mystery Science Theater 3000 and was like, that's what the door's probably like in the pyramid.
She's an idiot.
I sat down next to Sari. Tell me all about the tomb, I said to Uncle Ben. Whose tomb is it? What's in there? He chuckled. Let me say good morning before I launch into a lecture. Sari leaned over my cereal bowl. Hey, look!
Wait, she's Sari? Oh, I'm thinking of Navi.
Hey, look! She said, pointing. I got a lot more raisins than you did. I told you she could turn breakfast into a contest. Well, I got more pulp in my orange juice, I replied. It was just a joke, but she checked her glass to make sure. Uncle Ben wiped his mouth with a paper napkin. He took a long sip of black coffee. If I'm not mistaken, he began, the tomb we have discovered here belonged to a prince. Actually, a cousin of King Tutankhamun.
Weren't King Tutankhamun's parents his cousins? Does that make sense? They're siblings, right?
So he would be his own cousin. Oh, God.
Wonky motherfucker.
That's King Tut. Sari told me, interrupting. I know that, I replied sharply. King Tut's tomb was discovered in 1922, Uncle Ben continued. The vast burial chamber was filled with most of Tut's treasures.
That sounds like a tacky fishing antique shop.
It was the most amazing archaeological discovery of the century. A smile crossed his face. Until now. What a cocky asshole. Do you think you found something even more amazing? Possibly amazing? I asked. I hadn't touched my cereal. I was too interested in my uncle's story. He shrugged. There's no way of knowing what's behind the tomb door until we open it, Gabe. But I have my fingers crossed. I believe we found the burial chamber of Prince Koru. He was the king's cousin, and he was said to be as wealthy as the king. Alright. And do you think all of Prince Koru's crowns and jewels and belongings are buried with him? Saridun asked. Uncle Ben took the last sip of his coffee and slid the white mug across the table. Who knows? He replied. There could be amazing treasures in there. Or there could be temple guards who grab the kids and take them away and get their piece of the pendant and no one ever finishes it and the purple parrots. Or it could be empty. Just an empty room. Like Al Capone's vault. How could it be empty? I demanded. Why would there be an empty tomb in the pyramids? Grave robbers, Uncle Ben replied, frowning. Remember, Prince Koru was buried sometime around 1300 BC. Over the centuries, thieves broke into the pyramids and robbed the treasures from many burial chambers. Wait, didn't you say it's been like months where they're digging into it? I don't think thieves have like full Ocean's 11, or I guess vast desert wasteland 11, where they go in there and like steal shit over months. This is stupid. He stood up and sighed. We may have been digging for all these months only to find an empty room. No way, I cried excitedly. I'll bet we find the prince's mummy in there and millions of dollars worth of jewels. Uncle Ben smiled at me. Enough talk, he said. Finish your breakfast so we can go find out. Hey, I bet Uncle Ben was eating Rice Krispies. Bringing back the rice jokes, baby. Sari and I followed Uncle Ben out of the tent. He waved to two young men who came out of the supply tent carrying digging equipment. Then he hurried over to talk to them. Sari and I lingered back. She turned to me, a serious expression on her face. Hey, Gabe, she said softly. Sorry I've been such a pain. You? A pain? I replied sarcastically. She didn't laugh. I'm kind of worried, she confessed, about Daddy. I glanced at Uncle Ben. He was slapping one of the young men on the back as he talked, his usual jolly self. Well, he does spend a lot of time with young men in rural, weird areas and refers to himself as Daddy. And also wears that weird leather harness all the time and a bizarre leather cop hat. Why are you worried? I asked Sari. Your dad is in a great mood. That's why I'm worried, Sari whispered. He's so happy and excited. He really thinks this is going to be the discovery that makes him famous. I like that they got into digging shit to get famous. So? I demanded. So, what if it turns out to be an empty room? Sari replied, her dark eyes watching her father. What if grave robbers did strip the place? Or, what if it isn't that prince's tomb after all? What if Daddy breaks the seal, opens the door, and finds nothing but a dusty old room filled with snakes?
Like you know, that guy at Atlanta Johnson and the Temple of Disappointment?
She sighed. Daddy will be heartbroken. Just heartbroken. He's counting on this so much, Gabe. I don't know if he'll be able to take the disappointment. Why look on the gloomy side? I Dunn replied. What if I stopped because Uncle Ben was hurrying back to us? Let's go down to the chamber, he said excitedly. The workers think we are very close to uncovering the tomb entrance. He put an arm on each of our shoulders and guided us into the pyramid. As we stepped into the shade of the pyramid, the air grew cooler. The low entrance dug at the bottom of the back wall came into view. It was just big enough for us to enter one at a time. Peering into the narrow hole, I saw that the tunnel dropped steeply.
I feel like there's a lot of sex jokes in there, and I don't know how to perfectly form them. You know, it's just a clump of clay right there to make dick jokes, and I just can't
figure out the right shape to start out with. I hope I don't fall, I thought. A heavy knot of fear tightened in my stomach. Diarrhea. I pictured myself falling and falling down into an endless dark hole, possibly while playing 20 questions with my best friend, a tank. Mainly, I didn't want to fall in front of Sari. I knew she'd let me never forget it. Uncle Ben handed Sari and me bright yellow hard hats. They had lights built onto them, like miners' hats. Stick close together, he done instructed. I remember last summer, you two wandered off and got us in a lot of trouble.
That's a callback to the first mummy book. I think it's called Curse of the Mummy's Tomb, but I'm not sure.
We won't, I stammered. I was trying not to sound nervous, but I couldn't help it. I glanced at Sari. She was adjusting the yellow hard hat over her hair. She seemed as calm and confident as ever. I'll lead the way, Uncle Ben said, pulling the chin strap under his chin. He turned and started to lower himself into the hole. But a shrill cry from behind us made us all stop and turn around. Stop, please, stop, don't go in.
I bet it's going to be like Uncle Ben's friend going like, hey, don't go in without me, you know? Or maybe it's cursed, who knows? Fucking Goosebumps.
Ugh, it's been 4 months since everything happened, and I'm still so fucked up and barely functional. And I realize it's not the booze at this point. It's just that trying to be funny and normal takes so much out of me and just pulls from a well that's just barren. And yeah, just getting bummed out again every time I start doing this. It's just like a weird reaction. I guess it's like an equal but opposite chemical reaction in the brain. Oh, God. Man. All right, let's fake it till we make it.
Chapter number 7.
A young woman came running across the sand. Her long black hair flew behind her head as she ran. She carried a brown briefcase in one hand, a camera strapped around her neck, bobbed in front of her,
smacking them titties.
She stopped in front of us and smiled at Uncle Ben. Dr. Hassan? She asked breathlessly. My uncle nodded.
Yes?
He waited for her to catch her breath. Wow, she's really pretty, I thought, and he instantly went through puberty. She had long black hair, sleek and shiny. She had bangs cut straight across her forehead. Beneath the bangs were the most beautiful green eyes I'd ever seen. She was dressed in all white, a white suit jacket and a white blouse over white slacks.
She's probably wearing white undies, you know, just to go with the whites that don't stand out. It would be a bad move to not do so.
She was short, only an inch or two taller than Sari. She must be a movie star or something, I told myself, assuming that everyone in the third world country is a movie star. She's so good looking. She set her briefcase down on the sand and brushed back her hair. Black hair. I'm sorry I shouted like that, Dr. Hassad, she told my uncle. It's just that I needed to talk to you. I didn't want you to disappear into the pyramid.
Yeah, that's why they don't call them disappyramids. See, it's that kind of humor that makes me severely depressed after, you know. Just saying.
Uncle Ben narrowed his eyes at her, studying her. How did you get past the security guard? He asked, pulling off the hard hat. I showed them my press card, she replied. I'm a reporter for the Cairo Sun. My name is Nila Ramad.
Ramad, Jesus. I bet her middle name's Wafers. I'm so sad every day.
I was hoping. Nila, Uncle Ben interrupted. What a pretty name. She smiled. Yes, my mother named me for the river of life, the Nile.
But she put an A at the end so it would confuse everyone.
Well, it's a very pretty name. Is it Nyla? I should go by Nyla, huh? Because there's one L. I'm going to do that from now on.
So it's even weirder that her middle name's Wafers.
Well, it's a very pretty name, Uncle Ben replied. His eyes twinkled. But I'm not ready to have any reporters write about our work here. Nyla frowned and bit her lower lip. I spoke to Dr. Felding. You know Corey, right? A few days ago, she said. My uncle's eyes widened in surprise. You did?
I gotta get a house phone.
Dr. Felding gave me permission to write about your discovery. Nyla insisted, her green eyes locked on my uncle. Well, we haven't discovered shit yet, Uncle Ben said sharply. There may not be anything to discover. That's not what Dr. Fielding, a.k.a. Noel, you know, instead of Corey this time, I don't know, told me, Nyla reported. He seemed confident that you were about to make a discovery that would shock the world. Electricity. That'd be tight if it said, electricity shocks the world, when it was like, you know, originally produced by people and harnessed. But I guess the word shock wasn't around, or was it around? Did shock come from electricity? Or did it already exist as in, like, surprise? I don't know. We'll look into this. Uncle Ben laughed. Sometimes my partner gets excited and talks too much, he told Nyla. Nyla's eyes pleaded with my uncle. May I come into the pyramid with you? She glanced at Sari and me. I see you have other visitors. My daughter, Sari, and my nephew, Gabe, Uncle Ben replied. Well, could I come down with them? Nyla pleaded. I promise I won't write a word for my paper until you give me permission. I don't trust reporters. Uncle Ben rubbed his chin thoughtfully. He swung the hard hat back onto his head. No photographs either, he muttered. Does that mean I can come? Nyla asked excitedly. Uncle Ben nodded, as an observer. He was trying to act real tough, but I could see he liked her. Like, not in the way that I like my cousin. Or maybe, did she say something? No, I don't like her, but maybe. Nyla flashed him a warm smile. Thank you, Dr. Assad. He reached into the storage cart and handed her a yellow hard hat. We won't be making any amazing discoveries today, he warned her, but we're getting very close to something. As she slipped on the heavy helmet, Nyla turned to Sari and me. Is this your first time in the pyramid? She asked. No way. I've already been down there 3 times, Sari boasted. It's really awesome. I just arrived yesterday, I said, so it's my first time down in... I stopped when I saw Nyla's expression change. Why was she staring at me like that? I glanced down and realized that she was staring at the amber pendant. Amber pendant this, amber pendant that. Her mouth was open in shock. I wonder if shock came from electric... No, I'm kidding. I won't get into that again. No, I don't believe this. I really don't. This is so weird, she exclaimed. Chapter number 8. What's wrong? I stammered. We're twins, Nyla declared. She reached under her suit jacket and pulled out a pendant she wore around her neck. An amber pendant shaped exactly like mine. Ooh, it's like a necklace version of Captain Planet. How unusual, Uncle Ben exclaimed. Nyla grasped my pendant between her fingers and lowered her face to examine it. You have a scarab inside yours, she told me, turning the pendant around in her fingers. She dropped mine and held hers up for me to see. Look, Gabe, mine's empty. Oh, that's boring. You can get like the resin fake amber ones with scorpions and stuff in Mexico, but they're not unique. You can just get a million of them. She dropped mine and held hers up for me to see. Look, Gabe, mine's empty. I gazed into her pendant. It looked like clear orange glass. Sorry, checking something. Nothing inside. I think yours is prettier, Sari told Nyla. I wouldn't want to wear a dead bug around my neck. But it's supposed to be good luck or some shit, Nyla replied. She tucked the pendant back under her white jacket. I hope it isn't bad luck to have an empty one. I hope so too, Uncle Ben commented dryly. He turned and led us into the pyramid opening. Drinking break. I'm not really sure how I got lost. Sari and I were walking together behind Uncle Ben and Nyla. We were close behind them. I could hear my uncle explaining about how the tunnel walls were granite and limestone. Our helmet lights were on. The narrow beams of yellow light darted and crisscrossed over the dusty tunnel floor like those red beams they have in spy movies. Then someone does some flips and somehow Drew Barrymore gets in there. And walls, as we made our way deeper and deeper into the pyramid. The ceiling hung low. It did not wobble to nor fro, and we all had to stoop as we walked. The tunnel kept curving, and there were several smaller tunnels that branched off. False starts and dead ends, Uncle Ben called them, referring to my life. It was hard to see in the flickering light from our helmets. I stumbled once and scraped my elbow against the rough tunnel wall. It was surprisingly cool here, and I wished I had worn a sweatshirt or, you know, something. Up ahead, Uncle Ben was telling Nyla about King Tut and Prince Koru. It sounded to me as if Uncle Ben was trying to impress her with all his rice knowledge. I wondered if he had a crush on her or something. Ooh, this grown man likes sex. This is so thrilling, I heard Nyla exclaim. It was so nice of Dr. Fielding and you to let me see it. Who is Dr. Fielding? I whispered to Sari. My father's partner.
Gay,
Sari whispered back. But Daddy doesn't like him. You'll probably meet him. He's always around. I don't like him much either. I stopped to examine a strange-looking marking on the tunnel wall. It was shaped like some kind of animal head. Sari, look, I whispered. An ancient drawing. Sari rolled her eyes. It's Bart Simpson, she muttered. One of Daddy's workers must have drawn it there. What kind of asshole has that kind of passion for archaeology? That he gets in the field, he finally is working on a site in fucking Egypt, opening this tomb that's never been opened in thousands of years. And he's like, hey, check this out. It's the Bart man, baby. Cowabunga. I knew it, I lied. I was just testing you. Testing the old Simpsons knowledge. When was I going to stop making a fool of myself in front of my cousin? I turned back from the stupid drawing on the wall, and Sari had vanished. I could see the narrow beam of light from her hard hat up ahead. Hey, wait up! I called, but the light disappeared as the tunnel curved away. And then I stumbled again. My helmet hit the tunnel wall, and then the light went out. Lights out. Hey, Sari, Uncle Ben, I called to them. I leaned heavily against the wall, afraid to move in the total darkness. More like perfect dark. Nintendo 64. Hey, can anybody hear me? My voice echoed down the narrow tunnel. Hear me? Hear me? Hear me? But no one replied. I pulled off the hard hat and fiddled with the light. I turned it, trying to tighten it. Then I shook the whole hat, but the light wouldn't come back. Sighing, I strapped the hat back on my head. Now what? I thought, starting to feel a little afraid. My stomach began fluttering. Oh no, this is no place for the Rhea. My throat suddenly felt dry. Hey, can anyone hear me? I shouted. I'm in the dark back here. I can't walk. No reply. Where were they? Didn't they notice that I had disappeared? Well, I'll just wait right here for them, I murmured to myself. I leaned my shoulder against the tunnel wall and fell right through the wall. No way to catch my balance, nothing to grab onto. I was falling, falling down through the total darkness. Speaking of total darkness, I'm going to stop here. I'm so fucking sad. Like I said, I know it's been fucking months now, but I just, sucks that my entire life was taken away. All right, I'll bring the yucks in a day or two when I can feel. Oh, fuck. Heyo, I'm back. It was much more than a day or two. It's been about 2 weeks. It's been a rough 2 weeks, as I guess it's been a rough almost 5 months now. I'm not doing any better emotionally. I did see Connie. I got tattooed by her, which was actually fine. Well, the only real bummer part was realizing that she's just miserable too. So it's like, oh, like I would have honestly at a point traded my happiness for hers. And that's kind of what I did, I thought. And then realizing, oh wait, no, we're just two separate people. They're both miserable. Really, I don't know, hurt.
And then the harder thing was I had to do two family things the next weekend, which was last weekend. It doesn't matter. Anyway, one of them was the engagement party for my cousin, who I'm obviously super happy for, but it was just terrible because it was, you know, two sides or two families that don't really know each other. So the thing they have in common is this wedding. So it's like, oh, let's talk about the ring a bunch. And I'm like, oh, I bought a ring. I, you know, couldn't sell it because it was custom made. And oh, venues. Oh, cool. No, they're expensive, especially when you don't use them and just pay the deposit. And oh, dress. Oh, yeah, we had a dress set in the closet for a year. Didn't see it. That would have been bad luck. Fuck. All right, I'm going to not try to bum myself out and keep this going. Drinking a vodka pog juice. It is a goddamn heat. There's a heat wave going on in San Diego. I don't know. Everywhere. It's fucking hot. But I guess I can't complain with, you know, the entire Houston and Louisiana and whatnot. I did give blood, though. So that makes me a hero. Fuck. All right. Bear with me on this one. Chapter number 9. My hands flailed wildly as I fell. I reached out frantically for something to grab onto. It all happened too fast to cry out. I landed hard on my back. Pain shot through my arms and legs. The darkness swirled around me. Like when you're playing a video game and then a bunch of stuff comes out of a swirl of darkness and you fall into it and all of a sudden you're in the dark world. My breath was knocked right out of me. I saw bright flashes of red. Then everything went black again. I struggled to breathe, but couldn't suck in any air. I had a horrible, heavy feeling in my chest. Oh, maybe he grew boobs. Like when a basketball hits you in the stomach. Finally, I sat up, struggling to see in the total darkness. I heard a soft shuffling sound, something scraping over the hard dirt floor. Hey, can anyone hear me? My voice came out, a hoarse whisper.
Nay.
Hoarse whisper. Now my back ached, but I was starting to breathe normally. Hey, I'm down here, I called out a little louder. No reply. Didn't they miss me? Weren't they looking for me? Nah, dude. No one misses you. No one cares. That's not true. I shouldn't talk shit. I have friends that are reaching out and helpful. I didn't even think that you guys realized that I was making the joke now that I think about it about my severe depression. Everyone's been good to me. I'm just not to myself. I was leaning back on my hands, starting to feel better. My right arm started to itch. I reached to scratch it and brushed something away and realized my legs were itching too, and I felt something crawling on my left wrist. Creepy crawlers. I shook my hand hard. What's going on here? I whispered to myself like a little bitch. My entire body tingled. Ooh, maybe he's coming off dope. I felt soft pinpricks up and down my arms and legs. That's definitely it. Shaking both arms, I jumped to my feet and banged my helmet against a low ledge. The light flickered on. I gasped when I saw the crawling creatures in the narrow beam of light, like the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland. Spiders. The spiders! Hundreds of bulby white spiders, thick on the chamber floor. They scuttled across the floor, climbing over each other. As I jerked my head up and the light swept up with it, I saw that the stone walls were covered with them too. How can so many spiders survive down there? Are there flies going in there? I thought it was all sealed off. What are they eating? They can't just eat each other, because then they wouldn't have enough calories to exist, right? It would just go down each generation, whatever. The white spiders made the wall appear to move as if it were alive. Spiders hung on invisible threads from the chamber ceiling. They seemed to bob and float in midair. I shook one off the back of my hand, and with a gasp, realized why my legs itched. Obviously, they're spiders. Spiders were crawling all over them, up my arms, down my back. Spider attack! Spiders were crawling all over me, up my arms, down my back. It's a spider attack! All right, that's my new song from my terrible 80s punk band. Help! Somebody, please! I managed to cry out. I felt a spider drop on the top of my head.
I brushed it away with a frantic slap. "Somebody, help me!" I cried, like Haley in that Eminem song. "Can anyone hear me? I think the spider's gone crazy." And then I saw something scarier, much scarier than your mama's derriere. A snake slid down from above me, lowering itself rapidly toward my face. R.L. Stine writing this, talking to his wife. I stole something completely from Indiana Jones. Oh, are you going to do something to make it original? No, I'm just going to steal something else from a different Indiana Jones. You know, two wrongs make a right. Brilliant, honey.
Chapter number 10.
I ducked and tried to cover my head as the snake silently dropped toward me.
I'm a snake.
Grab it, I heard someone call. Grab onto it. Is it just a rope and someone's picking him up or some shit? That's a really big bummer. Grab onto it. Oh, God damn it. With a startled cry, I raised my eyes. To my surprise, it was full of lies. The light beam followed, and I saw that it was not a snake that stretched above me, but a fucking rope. R.L. Stine, it's not a twist if you just lie to people. Stop doing that. Jesus, knock it off. Grab onto it, Gabe. Hurry. Sorry shouted urgently from high above. Brushing away, spiders! Kicking frantically to shake the spiders off my sneakers, I grasped the rope with both hands. I felt myself being tugged up, tugging hard, shooting ropes, pulled up through the darkness to the tunnel floor above. A few seconds later, Uncle Ben reached down and grabbed me under the shoulders. As he hoisted me up, I could see Sari and Nyla pulling with all their might on the rope. I cheered happily as my feet touched solid ground, but I didn't have long to celebrate. My entire body felt as if it were on fire. Oh no, fire ants and snakes and spiders. I went wild, kicking my legs, brushing spiders off my arms, scratching spiders off my back, stamping on the spiders as they scuttled off of me. Glancing up, I saw that Sari was laughing at me. "Gabe, what do you call that dance?" she asked. Bitch, I call it the nay-nay, and it's going to catch on in a few years. Uncle Ben and Nyla laughed too. Great. Now this woman that's like four times my age isn't going to hook up with me anymore. How did you fall down there, Gabe? My uncle demanded, peering down into the spider chamber. The wall. It gave way, I told him, frantically scratching my legs. I thought you were still with me, Sari explained. When I turned around, her voice trailed off. The light of Uncle Ben's helmet beamed down to the lower chamber. That's a long fall, Uncle Ben said, turning back to me. Are you sure you're okay? I nodded. Yeah, I guess. It knocked the wind out of me. And then the spiders. There must be hundreds of chambers like that, my uncle commented, glancing at Nyla. The pyramid builders, the Jews, just kidding, there's no evidence they did that, made a maze of tunnels and chambers to fool tomb robbers and keep them from finding the real tomb. Yuck, such fat spiders. That's body shaming, Sari groaned, stepping back. There are millions of them down there, I told her, on the walls, hanging from the ceiling, everywhere. This is gonna give me bad dreams, Nyla said softly, moving closer to Uncle Ben. You sure you're okay? My uncle demanded again. I started to reply. Then I suddenly remembered something. The mummy hand. It was tucked in my back pocket. That's what he calls his butthole. Had it been crushed when I landed on it? My heart skipped a beat. All these kids in Goosebumps have heart conditions. It shouldn't just be skipping beats. Maybe the heart rate will go up, but you guys gotta look into this. I didn't want anything bad to happen to that little hand. It was my good luck charm. I reached into my jeans pocket and pulled that bitch out. Holding it under the light from my hard hat, I examined it carefully. I breathed a sigh of relief when I saw that it was okay, unlike Dune and Gerard Way. It still felt cold, but it hadn't been crushed. No one will ever crush on Dune again. What's that? Nyla asked, leaning closer to see it better. she brushed her long hair away from her face. Is that
the summoner?
How did you know that? I demanded, holding the handed up so she could see it better. Nyla stared at it intently. I know a lot about ancient Egypt, she replied. I've studied it my whole life. That's how I feel about napping right now. It might be an ancient relic, Uncle Ben broke in like he broke into the rice game and took everyone by storm. Or it might just be a tacky souvenir, Sari added. It has real powers, I insisted, brushing it off carefully. I landed on it down there. I pointed to the spider chamber, and it didn't get crushed. Shouldn't you have a gnarly bruise then? I guess it is a good luck charm, Nyla said, turning back to Uncle Ben. Then why didn't it keep Gabe from falling through the wall? Sari cracked with a legitimate point. But I could, before I could answer, I saw the mummy hand move. The tiny fingers slowly curled. Out, and then in. I cried out and nearly dropped it. Gabe, now what? Uncle Ben demanded. Guy's a demanding motherfucker, sharply. Nothing, I replied. They wouldn't believe me anyway. I think we're done. We've done enough explore. Come on, words. Let me drink. Well, that cocktail's dead. I think we've done enough exploring for now, Uncle Ben said. As we made our way to the entrance, I held the mummy hand in front of me. I wasn't seeing things. I knew that for sure. The fingers really had moved. They made that shocker symbol that 13-year-old boys find as funny, but grown men find to be erotic. But why? Was the hand trying to signal me? Was it trying to warn me about something?
Chapter number 11.
2 days later, Uncle Ben's workers reached the doorway to the burial chamber. Sari and I had spent the 2 days hanging around in the tent or exploring the area outside the pyramid. Since it was mostly sand, there wasn't much to explore. It's a giant sandbox. Kids love sandboxes. How old are kids that play in sandboxes? You play in a sandbox till you're like 12, and then you realize you don't have to be sober, and then it's all over, right? That's how kids work. We spent one long afternoon playing game after game of Scrabble. Playing Scrabble with Sari wasn't much fun at all. She was a very defensive player. The best Scrabble offense is a good fuck it. And spent hours figuring out ways to clog the board and block me from getting any good words. Whenever I put down a really good word, Sari claimed it wasn't a real word and couldn't be allowed. And since we didn't have a dictionary in the tent, she won most of the arguments. Arguments. Sorry, never heard that word. I regret making that joke. Uncle Ben, meanwhile, seemed really stressed out. I thought maybe he was nervous about finally opening the tomb. He barely spoke to Sari and me. Instead, he spent a lot of time meeting with his people I didn't recognize. You don't know all adults, dude. You don't even live in Egypt. Fuck off. It's not about you. Oh. The engagement party wasn't about me. I kid. I was very pleasant until it got too heavy and I had to step outside and vape and get my head together. He seemed very serious and businesslike. None of his usual backslapping and joking. Uncle Ben also spent a lot of time talking with Nyla. Bet they did more than talking when they went to bed. Heyo! When they went to cot. Heyo! At first, she'd said she wanted to write about his discovery in the pyramid. But now, she decided to write an article about him. She wrote down nearly every word he said in a little pad she carried with her. Then, at breakfast, he finally smiled for the first time in 2 days.
Today is the day, he announced like Danny Filth.
Sari and I couldn't hide our excitement. I was visibly erect. Are you going to take us with you? I asked. Uncle Ben nodded. I want you to be there, he replied. Perhaps we will make history today. Perhaps it will be a day you will want to remember for the rest of your lives. He shrugged and added thoughtfully, Perhaps. Ooh, that was very Morrissey. A few minutes later, the three of us followed several workers across the sand and toward the pyramid. It was a gray day.
Every day is like Sunday.
Heavy clouds hovered low in the sky, threatening rain. The pyramid rose up darkly to meet the clouds. As we approached the small opening in the back wall, Nyla came running up, her camera bobbing in front of her. I loved what it was bobbing on. She wore a long-sleeved blue denim work shirt over loose-fitting faded jeans. She looked exactly like a sexy Jay Leno. Oh, my phone's ringing. Hold up. Sorry. So now it's 3 hours later, my phone rang, and then someone was in the neighborhood, and they stopped by, and I hung out with them for a while and drank more. But let's just finish this, shall we? Uncle Ben greeted her warmly. But still, no photographs, he told her firmly. Promise? Nyla smiled back at him. Her green eyes lit up excitedly. She raised a hand to her heart.
Promise.
We all took yellow hard hats from the equipment dump. Uncle Ben was carrying a large stone mallet.
Ooh, like the stone cutters from The Simpsons.
He lowered himself into the entrance, and we followed. My heart was racing as I hurried to keep up with Sari. The lights from our helmets darted over the narrow tunnel. Far up ahead, I could hear the voices of workers and the steady scrape of their digging tools.
They're probably using, like, shovels, because that's the most popular digging tool in the world. Maybe a trowel.
Goddamn. This is really awesome, I exclaimed breathlessly to Sari. Maybe the tomb is filled with jewels, Sari whispered as we made our way around a curve. Sapphires and rubies and emeralds, like some sort of cheesy Match 3 game on the app market. Maybe I'll get to try on a jeweled crown worn by an Egyptian princess, who is also like the mom of the king and the cousin and the uncle somehow. Do you think there's a mummy in the tomb? I asked. I wasn't too interested in jewels. Do you think the mummified body of Prince Koru is lying there, waiting to be discovered? Sari made a disgusted face. Is that all you can think about? Mummies? Well, we are an ancient...
All right, sorry. Drink more of my Budweiser talking.
Well, we are in an ancient Egyptian pyramid, I shot back. There could be millions of dollars worth of jewels and relics in that tomb, Sari scolded, and all you can think about is some moldy old body wrapped up in tar and gauze. She shook her head.
God, so materialistic. You don't care about history or human beings or people, just jewels.
You are the person that dies in the movie because you're too greedy. You know, most kids get over their fascination with mummies by the time they're 8 or 9. Uncle Ben didn't, I replied about the Rice King. That shut her up. We followed Nyla and Uncle Ben in silence. After a while, the narrow tunnel curved up sharply. The air grew warmer as we followed it up, as if Ra had farted. I could see lights ahead. Two battery-powered spotlights were trained on the far wall. As we drew closer, I realized it wasn't a wall. It was a door. Four workers, two men and two women, that's just fair hiring practices right there, were on their knees, working with small shovels and picks. They were scraping the last chunks of dirt away from the door.
It looks beautiful, Uncle Ben cried, running up to the workers.
They turned to greet him.
It's awesome, in the true sense of the word, he declared.
Yeah, it's awesome. You don't have to say in the true sense of the word. That makes you sound like a douchebag.
You know what? I am horny, in the true sense of the word.
Makes you sound like a douche, that's all.
Nyla, Sari, and I stepped up behind him. Uncle Ben was right. The ancient door really was awesome. It wasn't very tall. I could see that Uncle Ben would have to stoop to step inside of it. But it looked like a door fit for a prince. The dark mahogany wood, now petrified, must have been brought
from far away. I knew that kind of wood didn't come from any trees that grew in Egypt. Hey, is it true that cactus only grows in North America? Or maybe South America too? The Americas? If so, that's interesting, because cactus is everywhere. But maybe it's not where you're from, listeners. Strange hieroglyphics covered the door from top to bottom. It's just a bunch of drawings of dicks. I recognized birds and cats and other animals etched deeply into the dark wood. The most startling sight of all was the seal that locked the door, a snarling lion's head sculpted in gold. The light from the spotlights made the lion glow like the sun. The gold is soft, I heard one of the workers tell my uncle. The seal will break away easily. Uncle Ben lowered his heavy mallet to the ground. He stared for a long moment at the glowing lion's head and then turned back to us. They thought this lion would scare any intruders away from the tomb, he explained. I guess it worked. Till now. Yeah, till you jabronis ruined its purpose. Dr. Hassad, I have to photograph the actual breaking of the seal, Nyla said, stepping up beside him. You really must let me. We can't let the moment go unrecorded. He gazed at her thoughtfully. Well, I guess, okay, he agreed. A pleased smile crossed her face as she raised her camera. Thanks, Ben. The workers stepped back. One of them handed Uncle Ben a hammer and a delicate tool that looked like a doctor's scalpel. It's all yours, Dr. Hassad, she said. Uncle Ben done raised that tool up and with the other tool stew, and he was like stepping up to that seal, and then he was all like, once I break this seal, we will open the door and step into a room that has been sealed. Hasn't been seen in 4,000 years, he announced in ship. Nyla steadied her camera over her eye, carefully adjusting the lens. Sari and I moved up beside the workers. The gold lion appeared to glow brighter as Uncle Ben raised the tool. His rock-hard tool. A hush fell over the tunnel. I could feel the excitement, feel the tension in the air. Such suspense. I realized I had been holding my breath. I let it out in a long, silent whoosh and took another. The boring-ass sentence about breathing. I glanced at Sari. She was nervously chewing her lower lip. Her hands were pressed tightly at her sides. Anyone hungry? Maybe we should forget about this and send out for pizza. Uncle Ben Dunn joked about pizza. We all laughed loudly. Pizza, good one, Uncle Ben. That was Uncle Ben for you, cracking a dumb joke at what might be the most exciting moment of his life. The tense silence returned. Uncle Ben's expression turned serious. He turned back to the ancient seal. He raised the small chisel to the back of the seal. Then he started to lift the hammer, and a booming voice rang out, "Please let me rest in peace." And so finally ends part one of The Return of the Mummy, or Return of the Mummy Only, maybe not the, by R.L. Stine on Dune Reads Goosebumps. Hey, I got through it. That's impressive, right? Sorry for being such a bummer. I'm just bummed out. I'll try to do this one as soon as I can. Maybe tomorrow. If not, I'll start 2 weeks from now and hopefully get it done in one day. I didn't have to stop that one because I got bummed, so that's good. I guess... solid sign of sorts. Hit me up because I am sad and lonely, especially if you got a job. I could use that. I don't know. Fuck. Anyway, but yeah, hit me up. You know the real places. Thank you very much. Stay spooky, bitches.